shad parties have started.
That was
welcome.
Pretty funny.
What's funny?
I take it either one of you two would take it a sip. I heard that loud and clear.
Yeah, I wasn't looking at it. Thought I'd take one last sip before the music ended and I got caught. Welcome, everyone.
It may have been me too,
Mark.
Come
on in, sit down. Take a load off. Tonight we got a lot of information about the upcoming MS Shad shootout, and hopefully Mr. Rob Choi will be calling in and give us some intel on fishing for the shad. I guess have they started even yet? I'm not sure, but we'll get to all that. And some other things to cover. Since last we were on the air, we took a week off last week, or at least I did for sure, because I was out of the country and kind of made it difficult to do a show. So we went ahead and replayed Danny's show from the week before from Warner Paddles. So I hope so everybody tuned in. If they didn't catch it the week prior, good show full of a lot of information. I had several phone calls and emails and questions that arise from the show, so that's why I kind of thought the best one to replay would have been that one, so hopefully people tune back in. If you miss any shows from any one of our five nights a week hosts, four nights a week, you can always download the show on podcast, and if you have either one of your apps on your phone, either an Android or Mac, Apple, whatever you're calling it, you can also go on there with your app and just listen to back shows. So no reason, no excuses to miss any one of the Kayak Fishing Radio weekly shows. What else do I got coming up? Unfortunately, we still do not have a location for the next boondoggle. Well, there is a location, I guess, but all the deal hasn't been signed and finalized, so they're not releasing anything yet. But I'm told as soon as they know, we'll be the next ones to know. So hang tight, stay here with Kayak Fishing Radio and to yakangler.com. They will be releasing that location.
Looking for a group of kayak anglers to share your kayak fishing adventures with? Check out yakangler.com, your ultimate fishing resource.
On cue. Look at that. My production manager working. What was I getting ready to say? I lost my train of thought with that. Yeah, so I don't even know the dates. October 14th, I believe it is, that weekend, for the Columbus Day boondoggle.
Uh-huh.
On non-mentioned spot. Yeah, is that the right date?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
I honestly, off the top of my head,
I can't even.
It's Columbus Day
calendar.
Weekend.
Columbus Day weekend, that's all you need to know. Every calendar
is
marked for the
federal
holiday.
We'll get a new boondoggle button we can burn out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So what else we got going on? That's about it. The weather's kind of trying to straighten out around here. Hopefully we'll get its head wired together. Yesterday was in the 70s, and today we're back in the 50s. But looking at the long-range forecast, it's starting to look a lot better. So I think we're over the hump, so to speak, and should be having spring here pretty soon.
Did you say hump?
Hump. Do the hump, the hump. My nose is large like a pickle. Who remembers that one? I know you did.
Wow.
That's my little rap session for tonight. Can't play basketball and I can't rap, so I better quit quiet right now.
No.
Wow. Where's that whip button? Let me go back and hit that whip button.
Oh, boy.
Just carry on.
Tom's back in the show. It's a license to go ahead and hit buttons. Thanks, Tom.
It's my fault.
Well, I know some guys I can do it with, some I can't. And Tom's been drinking. I've been drinking. I can hit some buttons.
Oh, that's the way the rules work.
And I believe Rob Choi has just joined us.
Has he been drinking?
Hello. I'm sorry?
No.
What'd you say? We were just having a discussion about some nights we don't use as many buttons as we do other nights, depending on the guest that we have on. And Chris said that Tom and herself are both having an evening cocktail or two, so it was free night to hit buttons.
I just cracked open my first beer, too, so.
Oh, boy.
I can't get crazy. I still got the kids, though. I can't get all crazy yet.
Yeah.
What was it? Rob,
you gotta give them a little. No, I didn't say that on the air, did I?
Rob, how do you get online?
How do I get online?
Now, who is your internet provider?
Verizon.
You know, you can just request a new IP that will resolve some issues.
Wow. Oh, Rob, too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is going to be a great show.
All right. Well, let me cover my other information, then we'll get to our two Richmond boys before we run out of time tonight. So I'll make sure I cover everything here. We were just talking about the weather. And with the break in the weather coming, we also have, of course, our one and only North Carolina report that I get promptly every week from our good friend Philip Ruckert down at Get Outdoors. So let's see what Philip's got going on, because they get the and look at the top of the report. Right here we go. Both hickory and American shad have been good but scattered from rapids down to troubled field gut past week. Water is still a little muddy, he says. High from recent rains running about 6,200. Wow, look at Philip giving a detailed report. 6,200 CFS and at 46 degrees. Shad fishing should be good for another week or two, depending on how quick the water warms up. Once it does, they'll spawn and move out of the river. Let's see what else we got. Oh. Half plus once. What the heck is that? Half ounce shad, darts, or spoons work well, but be prepared to break off terminal tackle when drifting in strong current. Also mixed in, I guess he's saying, there's small up to 17-inch striped bass have begun showing up in spotty numbers. And one more freshwater report. Most reservoir surfaces, water surface temperatures are between 52 and 54 degrees, prime time for late staging big bass preparing to move onto beds. Lots of nice bass being landed lately. 2-foot to 4-foot flat bill crankbaits and jigs work around structure and producing well. You can tell how much freshwater fishing I do. It's hard to even read it, let alone know what he's talking about. And now to something I know something about. The coastal report for North Carolina. Red drum from 18 to 30 inches have been holding in water as shallow as 1 foot the past week as the water remains cool due to the extended cold spring. Some schools numbering in the hundreds have been found, but getting them to bite has been a whole other challenge. Slow work, suspended, or bottom-scented baits have enticed a few, but not many.
Gulp.
Yeah, gulp, or procure the heck out of something, I guess.
Just saying.
Speckled trout catches continue to be good with fish in the 16 to 21-inch range. They're still schooled, so once you find one, you'll likely get multiple bites in the same location. And then on to the events he's got here. The Get Outdoors Spring Sale starts this Friday, April 5th through Sunday the 7th. Store-wide savings up to 20% on kayaks and up to 50% on accessories. One raffle prize to be awarded each day of the sale. Manufactured reps on hand Friday and Saturday for online shopper sales prices will be reflected on the store website, except for kayaks, canoes, and paddle boards. Please call for availability in quotes. Sale flyer online, and you can go to shopgetoutdoors.com/spring sale event. As always, thank you, Philip, for your report. Be sure
I would
to
like
check
to
out.
Add something.
Mm-hmm. From North Carolina?
I'm actually going to talk. For those people that actually use scent, stay away from spray scent, particularly in windy conditions. That could backfire.
don't have a lighted match around you either.
Yeah. Oh no no. You do. You want to abstain from lighting that cigarette right that moment.
Chris is talking from experience, not with the fire part, but the spraying.
Wow.
Spraying. What do you think? That everybody didn't figure that one out, honey?
Oh, the spray set. Oh my God, that was terrible. Oh, don't fight
like camping and peeing uphill. That's silly.
Seminars.
What's that, Rob?
It's kind of like going camping and peeing uphill, or if you're hiking or whatever. You just gotta know better. You know what I mean? Where you're, if you, never mind.
I'm
sure everybody
I got it. Okay. Something with the fan too, right? All right. Well, again, thank you, Philip, for your timely weekly reports on the North Carolina fishing scene. Here locally, we don't have much of a fishing scene yet. It should be getting better. I'm still hearing reports of good trout coming from the Elizabeth River. But other than that, I haven't heard of much. In the saltwater scene, I have seen some freshwater bass being caught online. Unfortunately, sorry to say, I don't follow a lot of that, so can't help you there. But it should be getting better. I think that we are, like I said earlier, on the upswing of the weather. So hopefully we'll get out of this cold snap and get to fishing. All right. I miss anything in the chat room yet? Who all we got joining
us? Philip Brucker said, thanks, Double L crew. Now since I know exactly who Yak for Fish is.
Oh, he's not talking in German tonight, see?
No, he's not. Tom Bundeheim is complaining that Rob Choi does not recall his return his calls. Arlie says, don't blame him, LOL. Otherwise than that, really nothing going. Oh, Joe. He's got
Joe's trying to hijack the show.
Yeah, he is.
You need to ban him.
I guess they got some details for April 27th, and it might be a Lynn Haven clean the inlet fishing event.
Yeah, we talked last night, and he didn't want to share it because he wasn't ready. Now he's ready in the middle of the show.
He
so
just
you're just
did.
Gonna have to wait.
I gave him a red card for hijacking.
Give
it,
guy.
Yeah,
a
there
title,
you go.
Like president of a fishing club, and he thinks he owns the world.
Joe,
give him a rope. He'll want to be a cowboy, right?
Here, I got something for you, Joe. Joe, this is for you because it just won't go away.
Hey, that's no way to talk to Speckled Trout Joe. That's no way to talk to Speckled Trout Joe. You all need to have some more respect for that guy.
Here, I'll Speckled Trout button. Are you ready? Here we go.
We're talking about the wicked pisser here. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, red card, Rob.
Did you hear that?
Nope.
Let's do it again.
That's a red card, too? Wow.
There
it was. Red card.
There was a
this is exciting.
Button. Yeah.
He said, this is not funny. Not funny when it's about you, is it, Joe? Always about Joe. Oh, wow. Pretty funny.
Not always about you, Joe.
All right, Joe, we'll get your information shared. Don't worry. Just sit back and relax. All right, so tonight we have Tom Mattel with us from the MS Shad Shootout. And we also have Mr. Rob Choi with us, who is going to be doing a shad fishing presentation next Friday at the Appomattox River Company in Midlothian. Is that right, Rob?
Yes. Yep.
No? I don't know the address, so I don't know.
You
know it off the top of your head.
But you can look up Appomattox River Company. They got the address on their site. The Midlothian.
Yeah, so go to, right, paddleva.com, and you'll be able to go and see Rob himself speaking in person about shad fishing. So we're going to cover both gamuts tonight. We're going to talk about the tournament and what's going on with the event. And then, Rob, we'd like for you to kind of point some of our listeners who maybe not be able to attend your seminar on Friday night, but don't give it all away, so make people want to come. But just, I'm sure there's some, like myself,
yep,
who's
yep.
not going to drive up. Give us some help out with the shad.
Yeah.
So, Tom, we'll start with you just so you can give everybody kind of a brief what's going on with this event and how they can find out more information. So when is it and where can they go to?
All right, well, the event itself is on April 13th, which would be the Saturday after this coming Saturday. I'll post up in the chat room the link to the website, but the link is msshadshootout, all one word, .org. So basically it's just a shad tournament. It's we throw in catfish as well because the kitties are up there trying to feast off the shad. So it's $20 to enter the tournament. Weigh-in will be two shad and one catfish, all catch photo released. Please don't bring shad to Bar Louie. We'll get kicked out. Yeah, that'd be great. First line's in the water. It's at 8 o'clock in the morning. We're going to have a brief captain's meeting starting at 7:30 in the morning where we'll hand out a tourney token. Line's out of the water at 4 o'clock, and like I said, it's catch photo release, bring photo cards. We're not too serious about the type of ruler you use, but, you know, it's got to be a legit ruler. Bring a hog trough or one of the Bass Pro Shop. I don't know what the heck they call theirs.
So you're saying Joe's special ruler would not qualify?
No, Joe will be disqualified on the spot anyway, so... You know, he can actually submit whatever
he
wants.
With or without ruler, he's getting kicked out right off the bat.
Just in general. Just for trying to hijack the show.
He can pay the entry, but he's automatically disqualified.
Rob, this is your part.
Joe can fish.
This is Rob's turn to say you can't talk about speckled trout. Joe like that again.
Well, we're not fishing for speckled trout, so it's okay.
Does the nose of the fish have to touch the end?
The end of the fish? How does the nose going to touch it then?
You got to bend them around so they make a circle on the, no. I mean, if you have a ruler that doesn't have, the flat part at the end that you can't jam the nose up into, we're just going to have to take a look at the way it's laid out on the ruler and make a judgment call at the,
Now, by the way, he wants to know pinch tail or not.
Say that again. Oh, no pinch tail.
Oh,
no natural lay of the fish.
Well, the thing about shad, they do naturally have, I mean, I don't know if you call it a fork or not, but they're definitely angled back. I mean, I imagine you don't want to tuck it too much, but, I mean, it's going to be angled backwards, so it is going to look a little bit pinched. You know what I mean? It's not like it's a redfish with a tail flat at the end.
Yeah, but I can see Joe showing up with a staple in the two ends of the fork tail and trying to claim an extra 2 inches of fish.
Oh, wait
a minute, you're all picking on Joe quite hard.
Now, it's because we love Joe.
Yeah.
He is a funny little bald man.
Now he wants to know, how do you measure, to the tip or to the V?
To the tip of the tail, the longest point of the tail.
I'm going to throw something out there.
Tom should know how to do them,
crap load of shad that are going to be very, very close. Like, a lot of them are identical once you start getting into them. I mean, if you get a big one, you'll know right off the bat. But I think that's part of why the kitty part of the formula, the catfish part of the formula, is actually a good idea, because that could be, you know, the make or break part of the tournament, really, in my opinion.
Yeah,
you know,
they're schooling
type of fish, so you're going to get a lot of cookie cutter, are you not?
Yeah, a lot of
yes.
them. And even within the schools, a lot of them, even from school to school, they are still going to be, you know, most of them are going to be, you know, the 15 to 17 inch range. So, I mean, if I was to fish the tournament, I don't know still if I am or not, but as soon as I caught two shad, I'd pretty much just go look for some kitties. That's just me, though. Right on.
You're going to try to get the hog underneath the 14th Street Bridge.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's back up, because you did say that there's a captain's meeting in the morning. Where is said captain's meeting, just for everybody to show up?
The captain's meeting is going to be in the parking lot of Ancaro's Landing.
Oh, you better get there early.
Oh, it'll be all right. We were fine last year. It'll be fine this year.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Especially if you get a group of people.
What time? 9:30?
7:30.
No, 7:30.
I thought 9:30.
Well, you thought wrong. It's 7:30.
9:30 would be a nice, pleasant time. You know, stop at Starbucks. Sun might be up a little longer.
Well, I'll tell you what. You can have the captain's meeting then, but you have to bring me Starbucks.
Ooh, that's easy enough to do.
recommendation about the Ancaros, though. If you haven't been there, it's got some characters that are around there. And my suggestion would be that if you have any sort of valuables or anything like that, don't leave it in plain sight in your car, because I've heard horror stories of them coming back, or people getting off the water and finding a giant hole in the window and all their nice stuff missing. So don't leave.
Yeah, that was
nice
actually
going to
be part of the captain's meeting.
Rob, you're not making it too enticing for people. Calm down.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
It is Richmond, man. Sorry.
I know.
There's certain sections that's just kind of, But I have been there,
and I've never encountered any of that. But one thing I will recommend to anybody that's going, if you are taking a trailer with your kayaks, to back in so you can pull straight out, because if it gets packed, they will pull in that parking lot any which way they can. And we went up there one year, and we had to unhook the truck from the trailer, try to get the truck out, walk the trailer out of the place. You just couldn't. That was the only thing I was commenting about, getting there early. I've never ran into any issues with
that ramp can be pretty muddy sometimes, too. So just be careful down there. Also, it's a high-traffic area, especially this time of year.
But they're running.
I can almost guarantee at 8 o'clock on a Saturday, if the weather's halfway decent, the parking lot's going to be full. There's people going to be trying to rush to in and out of the ramp. So if at all possible, you know, try to get your gear unloaded quickly and out on the water so you're not holding everybody else up.
The other thing is when you're paddling out, because that shoreline, it's like Lynn Haven under the Lesnar when all the surf fishermen are out there. So
watch out for those
paddles close to the other side. But it's not. Yeah. I'm trying to make it sound. It sounds like we're talking all negative about it, but it's not.
Yeah,
it's true.
Thanks,
I mean,
a lot, guys.
It's part of. I don't know if you call it a charm, but it's part of the scene there. It is simply what it is. And when you go straight, when you come out of the boat ramp at Ancaros, there is another launch. We'll talk about that later. But if you go straight out, make sure you go straight out towards the middle of the river as soon as you get off the ramp, because right around the corners, there's always people there throwing lines out with, you know, big old keepers and whatnot.
Gotcha. Well, that's a good question. You were going to bring up another ramp, and I know other places. So can we meet at 7:30, get our coin, Tom, and then go to another location to launch? Or do we all have
you
to
can. Take? Honestly, you can, for this tournament, you can fish anywhere in Richmond. You have to be at the captain's meeting to get your token. But if you want to go out of the 14th Street launch, or, you know, I mean, heck, even if you want to go downstream some, you can. Down to Deep Bottom, or what's the other one down there that I like, Rob?
No. Deep Bottom, there's Dutch Gap. But by that stage in the season, by mid-April, they're all going to be.
Yeah, you don't want to get in
near the far line, so there's no real reason to go, you know, farther south.
What's the other launch where you got to carry over the little locks or whatever?
Yeah, there's that's the 14th Street. Is that what you're talking about, 14th Street?
So where you got to carry in, like you got to go over that little walkway.
Oh, yeah, that's the Great Bridge. Yeah. The Great Bridge locks, which is just downriver from 14th Street Bridge. But that's really kind of a headache. It's definitely a two-man deal, and you got to go across.
And the 14th Street Bridge isn't a headache?
Yeah, well, compared to the Great Bridge locks, I think so.
Really?
I don't know if it's not called Great Bridge locks. It might be, I forget, it's something locks. I forget the name of it. Anyway, yeah, you got to go across a canal and whatnot, so it's kind of a pain. My suggestion would be 14th Street Bridge, is because it's going to be closer to the general area where you're going to want to fish. I'll stop talking about that. Ancaros is good too, though. I mean, sorry, I didn't want to give away too much.
Rob doesn't want to give his secret spot out.
Are you fishing in this tournament, Rob? You fishing in this tournament?
I still don't know. I wish I could say.
I just wonder how you ducked that little last thing. So I'm just joking, man.
Somebody.
It's all going to depend on whether it's better for me.
Somebody is asking, how many points do we get for catfish, or is it a combo catfish and that other fish that I can't name?
Yeah, basically the way that it works is you get a point for every inch. So it's total length of the two shad, one catfish.
So you can have
Does
two shad at 15 inches, that's 30 inches, and then you have like a, you know, 40-inch catfish, and that's, you know, 70 points. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, correct.
Essentially.
All right, here's a question about the shad. Is it either or this time of year, Rob, running, or?
Yeah, by April 13th, it will be both running. Yes. And you know what? This is something I'm going to talk about at the seminar, but it's definitely worth talking about on the show as well. Know the difference between the two because, you know, there's game wardens going around, and if you're caught with a holding onto an American, granted, I guess this is catch and release, but if you wanted to keep hickories for catfish, which I would do, you're allowed to do that, but with Americans, you cannot do that. American shad, a.k.a. white shad, their bottom lip will tuck right into their upper jaw, so nothing, well, a tiny bit will stick out. I'm talking a tiny bit, like, you know, a couple millimeters, but the hickory shad, their lower jaw sticks out probably a quarter inch or more from their upper jaw, so upper lip. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. And then I hear the fines are pretty hefty, too, so don't do that. And American shad are somewhat endangered. They're definitely on a protected list, so not mess with them. They generally do come in bigger sizes.
Gotcha. American all right. Shad. Well, you're going to cover all that, but anybody, it's pretty easy just to Google American and hickory shad and see the difference in the two. So, I mean, which, not that it really matters for this tournament, but the American is the one that they catch for their roe, correct? So they don't even keep the fish anyway.
I'm not sure, honestly. I'm not much on the culinary art side of it all, but that's what I imagine. Granted, I've cut open hickory shad, and their roe looks just like the other ones, too. So
yeah, maybe it's both. I wouldn't touch either of them, but I never knew what the fascination was, besides where I always knew the catfish bait, like you were mentioning. And finally, somewhere, as I was talking to somebody, and they were like, oh, this is the roe. They squeeze it out and put the fish back, fry it up for breakfast or something, so they can have at it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, Don, what else do we have on the shad shootout before we get into kind of how to catch them or what to look for in the species with Rob? So we got the basics down for what we're doing. Everybody's got to meet at 7:30, basically, one way or the other, at Ancaro's. You're going to go ahead and have a brief captain's meeting, issue the token, and then basically free to launch wherever they want.
Correct.
And then from there, they're going to fish, and they're going to come back to where to turn in their memory cards.
The weigh-in is actually going to be at Bar Louie, which is out on Broad Street out near Short Pump. It's a little bit of a hike from where the tournament itself is, but downtown Richmond, trying to find a place that can accommodate a bunch of cars with kayaks, trailers. You don't want to be in downtown Richmond, so we try to keep that out in the West End, but it's right off Broad Street, right by the Short Pump Mall, Short Pump Town Center Mall. And weigh-in is at 6 o'clock that night. You can get there earlier and start drinking because that's what we do.
Just for all
Chris does, at least.
What all intents and purposes, Tom, which licenses are required?
Rob, you may be able to help me with that. I believe if you're below the 14th Street, you can get by with just saltwater, right?
It's
considered
a
tributary.
Weird, you know, it's a strange thing. I don't honestly. It's one of those gray areas for me. Technically, above the 14th Street is where the non-tidal is,
mm-hmm.
the fall line. So I'm honestly not sure. I've always thought it would be freshwater, just because it's catfish and shad. And, I don't know. I wish I had a better answer for you.
I think the good rule of thumb is go ahead and get a freshwater license.
Yeah, get the combo. You're going to use it throughout the year if you haven't already bought your license. I mean, if you're not updated by this time of the year, I mean, it's for the price of the two, it's not worth messing around. And then to have the fresh. I know we looked at it before in the shop, and it's very, you start getting into that, all that. It gets pretty confusing trying to read it. It's like, you need a lawyer to read it. So if in doubt, just buy the $17 freshwater license.
Yeah.
If you're a state resident.
My bet would be for freshwater license, because it's Department of Inland Game and Fisheries that are up there checking it, which is freshwater people. So that's what I would go with.
Very good.
Yeah, but they're also the guys
right, so
that have their saltwater license.
Is there a cutoff? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, is there a cutoff for when they need to be at Bar Louie, like when 6 o'clock is the end.
Yeah,
if you're
6 p.m.
not in line,
you got to be in line for submitting your stuff by 6 o'clock.
Okay.
No later than.
Very good.
So you actually
I'll probably get up there around 5:30 and you know, start, you know, getting people's submissions and figuring it out.
Okay. All right. So what's in store for the besides for, you know, obviously we haven't talked at all about where it's going. You got the MS Shad shootout, so obviously multiple sclerosis. What's your take on that? What's local, give us a little feel about what you're doing this and what it's all about.
Well, honestly, just like most good things, this all came about from a conversation in a bar one night. My wife and I were out with our good friend Kim, who suffers from MS, and we were just talking about the different things that she does to support the MS Society, and everything she does always involves like 50 miles of running and walking and, you know, climbing through, doing the mud runs and everything. And I had zero interest in running because for those of you all who know me, I'm a little fluffy and fat guys don't run. And when she'd asked me if there was anything, you know, we could do to help out and everything, and, you know, to me, the first thing that comes to mind is fishing. And so, I started thinking about the beginning of the season. There's not a lot of going on. A lot of people are getting antsy to get out and start fishing. And, you know, we've got a great fishery up here during the shad run. And it just sort of fell in place to, you know, do this tournament last year. And we kind of threw it together at the last minute last year. And everyone seemed to have a good time. The fact that the top three spots ended up being separated by a half inch total, I thought was cool as anything. I mean, to have, you know, I mean, we only had 15, 20 guys in the tournament last year, guys and girls, sorry. And, you know, to have it come out to, I believe the weigh-ins were 54 and a quarter, 54 and a half, and 54 and three quarters. I just thought that was cool as anything to have it that close. And the fact that everyone except for two of us caught fish that day, was awesome. I mean, to have everyone coming out and having a good time. So, I mean, that's really where it came from. And, you know, this after the tournament, we had a lot of discussions from other people saying, you know, we can't wait to come up next year, do the same thing. It was a blast because it really is a laid-back tournament. It's not, you know, people aren't going to get all cranky with each other. And, you know, you see people out there not running around trying to get away from everyone else. They're fishing in groups because, honestly, the space that we're fishing in isn't a huge chunk of the river. It's
not
a very small
section of
the river.
You've got a ton of people there. You're not getting away from anybody, too.
No. I mean, you're going to be on top of each other.
Mark and I, we talked about that. We're going to hire a guide for the day. We're just following Rob Choi.
That's if I go.
He might be following him out to the Baybridge Tunnel then.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Very cool.
You planning on having any raffles, or is it just straight up tournament?
No, we're gonna have a raffle. We got a bunch of sponsors this year that have donated some cool stuff that we're gonna raffle off, try to raise a little extra money. I've got another thing that I'm working on right now, but it's not quite ready for prime time. And hopefully, maybe I can call back in next week and do a quick little announcement on the air here. You know, we've got you guys, First Landing, have donated a trip to the guided trip to the shootout. Ruthless Outdoor Adventures donated a trip, as well as some flies and what else? A couple of Corey's books signed. We've got a really cool custom rod donated by Evolving Currents, and we're pairing that with a Shimano Sonora reel. The importance of that is the Sonora happens to come in MS orange, so it actually makes the perfect color combo to represent the MS Society. I know I'm forgetting things here. Rob Choi. I don't know if he remembers this, but he donated one of those cool, what the heck is it called? Gammy, Komodo, Dragon, Ginsu, Prince. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you sound like you nailed it right on the head, dude. You're almost in there.
Kayak Kevin just volunteered some DVDs for the tournament.
Oh, good, because I was about to say that. So, Kayak Kevin is donating some DVDs. Oh, yeah, he did say that in there. Awesome. Who else? Russ Ham has donated a whole bunch of MS-themed bracelets. He ties, makes these himself. They look cool as anything. What am I forgetting? I know I
just
forgot. Appomattox River Company donated a gift card. And I know I'm probably forgetting some stuff, but if you go to the website that I said earlier, msshadshootout.org, it's also in the chat room. I've got a sponsors page that I'm trying to keep updated, and most likely I've forgotten someone on there as well, and hopefully nobody will kill me.
Yeah, the fish prints that I'm putting up there is actually of Shad. I went 2 weeks ago and nailed a really nice one, and it's like 2 pounds, 2 ounces, which is fairly large on the hickory scale. On the Hickory Shad scale, so should be 2 of those, I'm hoping. Definitely 1. So, kind of fit the theme, I thought.
Awesome. Wait, did I just hear you say there might be 2?
Possibly.
Oh, I love you, Rob.
Oh, I love you too, buddy.
Okay.
Okay, time to move on. Let's get going on this. Well, we appreciate it. And, yes, you can call in next week, give us a final update, what you got. So sign up. So if real quick, and then we'll jump to Rob. I know he's got his hands full tonight. We, you can also sign up the morning of, pay at the ramp if you haven't signed up or paid earlier, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're never going to turn down a registration. I'd prefer to close the registrations the night before at Appomattox River Company. But like I said, if somebody shows up the day of and absolutely has a burning desire to do it and give us money, you know, we'll accept it. But again, I'd prefer to let the ARC thing be the last opportunity to register.
And what time is that at ARC?
It is 6 o'clock, and Rob can tell you all about that part.
There we go. All right, well, hang tight, Tom. If there's anything you think of, anything you want to interject, feel free. Now we're going to get to
that. Oh,
you
know I'll interject.
Yeah, I know. I mean about the Shad tournament. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Not just, yeah, focus here, focus. All right, so, Rob, how do we catch the poor man's tarpon?
My favorite way is on the fly, but ultralight string tackle works very well, too. With fly... my setup is a 6-weight. You can go anywhere from, you know, 4 to 8 if you really want to. The thing is that your preferred line is sinking line, which is tends to be heavier, so that's why I like my 6-weight. Sinking line, I use a 200 grain. Forget the inches per second that it drops, but if you only have floating line and you don't want to buy new line to do this, you can buy, I think it's like a 10-foot section with a loop-to-loop connection to your floating line, and you want it to sink. And really, a lot of people want to talk about colors of flies and this and that, and sometimes it helps a little bit, but the main and most important thing is really just to get it down to the right level that they are. And every day it's going to be a little bit different. Some days, you know, they want to stick closer to the bottom, so you got to obviously let the line sink a little longer before you start stripping. Other times you're going to find them in the middle, and other times you're going to find them all over the top, which means as soon as they hit the water, you want to start stripping. And the strip it depends on the day. Sometimes they want a fast, short strip, or other times like a long, slow, and so you're just going to have to play around with that to figure out the pattern of the day.
How much does the run of the river affect all of that?
That
so,
definitely
I guess,
has a lot to do with it, yeah. And
right.
There's a link. I'm not at a computer right now just to put it up.
You want me to put it in the website or in the chat room, Rob?
You know what the link – well, I don't know the name of it. I mean, it's like it's a long –
you're talking about the U.S. GS one, right?
The one that just shows how many cubic feet per second it's running.
Yeah. I got it right here.
Yeah. But yeah, if you want to throw that up on the chat, it's and if you look up Shad on my blog, you should be able to find one of the or Shad seminar on my blog. angling-addict.com, you should be able to find the page that I posted the link up on. But anyway, it shows the cubic feet per second that's going down, and if it's above 10,000, it makes it really hard to catch anything. It's still possible, but it gets dangerous at that point. So anchor, especially if you're anchoring up. And for shad, I always do anchor up. Granted, when it's been ridiculously thick full of shad, you can't catch them when you're drifting, but my preferred method is to anchor up. And also, because there's so many boats out there, you hook up with a shad and you're fighting, and next thing you know, you're running into another boat that's anchored up. So it's a good idea to anchor up. I think optimal is, you know, between 5 and 7,000. This time of year, it usually doesn't get much lower than, you know, 5,000.
I want to stick with that for a second and ask you another question. So with it running, and I don't know what cubic feet per second it matters or not, but is it shallower, faster, better? Is it deeper, faster? Does that make sense what I'm asking you? So if it's running real fast, would you find them lower,
I know what
you're saying. Would you find them more?
I haven't found a difference. It's weird. I've found certain days. Sometimes I think it's the amount of sunlight. I don't know. Maybe it's the pressure. I'm not sure exactly. But even when it's running fast, they'll bite down deep. They'll bite up high. Granted, getting it deeper when it's running faster is a lot harder, especially a little fly. So when that happens, and this is generally the case when I'm casting anyway, I'll try to anchor up and try to cast somewhat perpendicular with the current, if not a little bit up current. So by the time you get all your fly line out, as soon as it hits the water, normally I'll mend it, which is, you know, you flip, instead of getting this big, deep bow in your fly line because the current's pushing it like a U-shape pointing downriver, I try to mend it so it kind of sort of straightens up, and you do a countdown to get it to the right depth, depending on the day, like I said, and you start stripping, essentially. Lately, purple and pink was good, but usually by mid-April, you know, a lot of chartreuses and oranges, and sometimes just a little gold is good, you know, white and red. One of my favorites is the little clouser. It's like a pink and chartreuse clouser, a little one. You want me to talk about the spinning setups, or is there any?
I want you to talk about whatever you want, brother. But I want to stop because I guess I kind of jumped the gun on you, and just to kind of talk about the back to the shad. And they're not really eating anything that's in there that you're throwing at them.
Not
trying
really.
To get it out of the
yeah.
way because they're swimming upriver
yeah.
when they got one thing on mind, just like a salmon going upriver.
Yeah, they're
up
just really aggressive. just wanting to knock stuff out of their way, especially if it's little. So a lot of times you'll hook them on the side of the face. I mean, most times I do hook them somewhere in the mouth, but I've found times, you know, inside of the face, on top of the face, like just all over the place.
Right, because that's the nature of any fish. They don't have fists to punch it out of the way, so they'll eat it and get it out of the way because they're trying to go.
Well,
I'll
just bite it and, you know, toss it away, yeah.
Right. So I just wanted to, I jumped, right to have it catch them, but I just wanted to kind of, for anybody who's not fish one before, to understand that it's not like other fisheries where you're trying to present something to a species to get him to take it. You're putting this in his way, and he wants it out of the way is basically what the shad are doing.
Which is exactly why, like I said, that the most important part is to really get it to the level that they're at. Because if it's above it, they're not going to go out of their way to whack it.
Right.
But if it's in their way, they are going to whack it.
And
they're fine. And there's no, like, to bite itself, you're not going to really even notice it. It's all of a sudden be like, bam, it just smacked it. And
come tight. Yeah, it just comes tight.
Yeah, it just comes straight tight, yeah.
Right. Do you use any type of bottom machine, fish finder, or anything like that going on? Or you just kind of like your lure?
Yeah, I think I used to it first, but I've learned the terrain for the most part. And the majority of the depth is going to be, you know, 15 feet-ish. It would take, you know, 3 or 4 feet either way. If you do find holes, you know, that's good to work it because, you know, they are going to try to rest in certain pockets, you know, before they get their strength to go up more upriver. So those are good spots.
other water discharge areas where there's current breaks and stuff like that. That's good stuff too. And you are going to get snagged. It's a river. There's a lot of structure down there. I forgot to mention, there's a decent chance that hooking into some stripers at that time of year as well. You know, schoolie-sized stripers, sometimes bigger even, you know, depending on...
They're angry striper, too.
Somebody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like we were just saying, they're up here for a reason, and yeah, they want to...
We're getting in the way of that. We're blocking them.
Somebody just asked, so I should leave the worms at home? Chad won't hit them?
I'm not familiar with using worms for shad, but I don't know. if you have experience or knowledge about it, it's worth a shot. I'm not familiar with that.
Being in their face kind of thing. If it's in their face and they feel like it's stopping them from going to do their little egg laying, then they probably
would. I've heard of people just throwing little gold Aberdeen hooks on, kind of like the herring thing on Walker Sam back in the day, but they had it like that for shad, and they were still whacking them too. So, I mean, seriously, mid-April, it's going to be sick. They're every year, it's a zoo out there, and there's a gazillion fish being, I mean, people, I'm talking about like catching over 100 fish in a day type thing, you know, like it's like non-stop action. There's also days where it's a struggle, so it's weird.
Well, plus you get a lot of good stories from the river.
Yeah, well, things
so
that slowed down that you were not expecting to see.
What's the conventional side?
I'm sorry, real quick, I want to go back on and touch about the fly, last thing about the fly. I prefer fluorocarbon just because shad have giant eyes and I just have this superstition they probably see a lot of stuff. But a lot of people think you need a really long leader. And if the water is running, you know, fairly fast, I prefer a shorter leader, probably 4 feet-ish, instead of like the average, you know, the 10 foot that most people use, or 9 to 10 feet, simply because the sinking line will sink faster than the skinny mono or skinny any leader. And what happens is the current will keep the fly up a little higher, and because the leader is so long and the fly line itself is sinking faster, so I prefer about roughly about a 4 foot leader, and that's anywhere from, I like ultralight even with the fly, so I'll go with like 2s and 4s, but you know, up to 8 if not more, but definitely not, I wouldn't go over say like 14 or so. As far as conventional, an ultralight spinning setup is great because you can cast these itty bitty shad darts and shad spoons, and they're a lot of fun on there, especially when you hear, you know, your itty bitty reels screaming drag, you know, because they will pull drag. They're surprisingly strong fish for, you know, their relative size, and they're acrobatic, you know, they're all sorts of aerial displays. They're wild fish, and pretty at that when they're, you know, the sun's going down or whatever and get the light glistening off. I'm rambling now.
You need to toss up the spoons on the dart?
I prefer a little gold shad spoon. I've known guys who use darts as well. Darts usually get a little bit deeper, and, you know, the Americans really seem to like the darts. So that might be a good idea for some of you guys who want something a little more of a challenge and a little bit bigger. You might not get as many fish, but you'll probably get higher quality fish. And the setup I normally go is from the main line. I'll put a little a bullet sinker or a tiny egg sinker, probably in the quarter ounce range, and then under that a little swivel to keep the weight above the leader line, and probably about maybe a 2 foot section leader. Again, not too heavy, preferably fluorocarbon because it's my superstition. And then straight to the spoon or dart. Now, I saw a guy while I was out there probably a week and a half ago. He was using a spinning setup. He was catching probably 2, maybe even 3 to my 1. Now, it was an itty-bitty purple jig, and about 10 inches above that, he tied on a spoon. And it was literally like every cast, and there are like nice ones too. So that's a thought.
All right, when you're using, well, I guess it doesn't matter, conventional or to fly, just for every, you're casting upriver?
and letting it drift? Or are you trying
not,
to cast
not directly upriver? No. Usually want to anchor, and you're gonna end up parallel with the shoreline, which is natural. You know what happens when you anchor up. Cast perpendicularly with the current, or like 20 degrees up current, as opposed to straight perpendicular. And with I'll be honest, I'm not even that familiar with using conventional setup, just because I'm so used to using the fly when I'm over there. But I think it's a matter of counting down and sometimes you count down too deep and you end up snagging. But find that median in there, and if you haven't caught anything on that countdown, you know, count less or count more depending on where you want to go. If you want to come up higher, if you want to go up, you know, go deeper.
Have you tried tandem rigs?
I have not. Obviously the guy next to me did, and he did great. Another thing is also if you feel like moving around and you don't want to anchor up, I've actually done this before a bunch of times also when I'm just simply looking for bait and not looking for actually shad action. You control a spoon or two spoons even. And that's obviously you're going up current from that, because if you're going down, it makes for a little bit of headache with the line, yeah. But
it's all a commander. I wanted to know what size ride and reel are you talking about using? And reel, small.
You can go heavier if you want, but I mean, you're going to have the most fun on an ultralight, like a 6 foot or even smaller with an ultralight reel. I'm talking like a 1,000 size, or I've used it, you know. I say 1,000, that's like Shimano code. Or
that's right.
I guess
you're right.
That's
pretty much the industry.
Right, most people, right? Most companies.
Yeah.
But 1,000, yeah. I've used it at 2,500, and something small, so you really, you know, enjoy the fight instead of, like, just crank the thing right in, you know?
Right.
It's such a drag, a little light, enjoy a little, you know, drag and pull.
Do you get some tail walk out of them?
Oh, yeah. They're
that's
wild.
What I'm saying. Somebody asked, that's what they call them, poor man's tarpon.
Yeah, that's how I flip out of it. I mean, I had one last year. My friend Seth Goodrich was fishing with me, and the thing jumps about head height over his kayak, like right in front of him. I mean, it was just wild. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're amazing creatures. A lot of fun. So
it is a lot of fun. They can be frustrating.
Yeah, they can. Yeah, it is, especially when somebody is doing something right and they're just failing them left and right and you can't seem to figure it out. And you really just got to keep switching it up to find what it is that they're doing right. And that's the name of the game out there. Because there's just a gazillion people out there. And you just got, whoever's doing it right, just try to pay attention to, you know, how long is he counting? You know, what angle is he throwing it at? Because I don't believe in like, this spot is that much better than that spot, especially mid-April, because they're literally everywhere.
But I have seen, from my personal, I've only done it a couple times, but the color thing, I'm sure you're familiar, Rob, with Dale Huggins over at Orvis store in Troy.
Oh, yeah, great guy.
Then that guy, he knows, and we went, Corey and myself and Dale, and I'm this stubborn guy, you know, I thought I knew what colors to use, and they were over there, and it was that purple. You mentioned it earlier, and that was it. It was like nothing. I finally went over to Dale. He was on his John boat, and we were in our kayaks, and I was like, all right, damn it, I give up. What are you doing? And he gave me a couple of
doing?
Purple flies. He gave me a couple of the purple flies and a little silver mylar in it, and it's like tied it on, and ba-boom. I was like, are you kidding me? Same spot I was in.
I'll tell you what. Whatever color it was. Yeah, but then I'll tell you what, an hour later, that color won't work again. Or maybe it will, but I've had it to where it's all of a sudden they want something else. I keep thinking it's like something's happening in the sky or something is changing that doesn't match what they want anymore. So all of a sudden doesn't look like something alive to them or whatever.
Or they just don't see it maybe because of the water clarity and the conditions of the water.
There you go. That's true. That's very true. So.
But it is frustrating to think of something that little that we already mentioned aren't even looking for what you're tossing to them. They want it out of their way, and you're persistently pounding the water with something, and you change color, and then it works. It's like, what the? But anyway, be willing and flexible when you get out there to change lures, to change colors, to change things like that. Mm-hmm. Don't just get out there and
beat this guy to death with one color.
You kind of have to find a system. It's like whenever, like when I first get out there, you know, I automatically think about the depth. Where do I want to start? And if it's not there, then I usually start deeper. That's what I normally do. Like try to get it as deep as I can, without hanging up. And then if that's not working, then I'll bring it up a little bit, and then bring it up a little bit more. And if that doesn't work, then I will change colors.
Right.
And you know, a black is good too, which doesn't make sense to me because that's like you really won't be able to see it. But I guess fish do. And you know, a simple gold has worked real well. Black and red.
The darker colors, silhouette colors, just like, the darker silhouette. It's very interesting because, all right, so you guys were mentioning earlier the 14th Street Bridge. Is that, if you come out of Ancaro's and go north or upriver, is that bridge you will go under there?
It's an old-looking bridge. You'll see a whole bunch of rocks upriver from there. Now, if you go across the bridge. Yeah, Southern States will be your right. And as soon as you cross that bridge.
Wait, Rob, it'll be on your left, won't it?
Left. It'll be on your left going upriver. So the fall line, if you're heading towards the fall line, it'll be on your left.
No, I'm sorry. What I meant was when you're crossing the bridge, Southern States will be on your right. That's what I meant to say. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to describe how to get there. So when you come out of
the water
and you work your way into the city and you cross the 14th Street Bridge, the Southern States will be on your right on the south bank. And you're going towards the north bank because the ramp is on the north bank. And when you get it, like as soon as you get across, you'll see a flood wall that the road goes across. But like literally right before the flood wall is where the entrance is. So it's really easy to miss. If you notice that you're going through the flood wall, turn back around and make a turn right at the.
Mark, you were asking where the actual bridge was, though, right?
Well, I was asking in relation because that's the only place we've ever fished. Like, right around that bridge area, and I've actually went up right to the edge of the fall line and kind of drifted back down river and fished my way down and in that area there. So that's why I was just trying to get my boundaries straight as to what, because you guys kept mentioning the 14th Street Bridge, and I was curious if that was
also,
the bridge.
That's also another place to watch out for people fishing, because they'll be allowed to fishing off the bridge, so you got to watch out for the lines if you're trying to go underneath that bridge.
And they heave it off that bridge.
Yeah, they're all
what's that?
Oh, I just said they heave
bodies.
It off that. Well, yeah, that too, probably. We're in downtown Richmond. It's a classy place,
but,
dude.
Yeah, just down river from that is the I-95 bridge, and that's actually a really good place to start during that time of year. Normally, by 8 o'clock, there'll be two or three boats, if not more, already anchored up in their favorite spots there. But that whole area
I'm going to switch species real quick, and then we're going to get going at the top of the hour. I know you guys got things to do. And in that same area, I guess the cats are pretty good. Are you definitely dead bait and cut bait type of thing for the cats in that area?
Yeah, your favorite type of fishing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Eating bait.
I'll probably start right out with that just to get it out of the way. I'll use those American shad that I caught earlier and cut them up. I'm joking.
They really like the herring.
Yeah, the herring is off limits. There's a moratorium on those too. I don't know if I told anybody else or mentioned it earlier, but they're easy to catch on sabiki rigs, but they're generally look like American shad, but a lot smaller. There's blueback herring, obviously. They've got a bluish tinge in the back, but there's a moratorium on them. You can't keep or hold any of them, so you cannot use the bait, unfortunately. Well, fortunately and unfortunately, depending on who you are.
Gotcha. Well, you can be as lucky as we were the time we went, and here comes the Department of Game and Inland shocking the river at the same time we were trying to fish. So that kind
of that'll slow
it down real bad when they tell you to get out of the way. And you watch about a 100 shad come to the top and all kind of other stuff. Kind of shuts your fishing day down for a while. Well, like, of all the times we picked to drive all the way up to Richmond, here comes the shocker boat. Donk.
There's also a lot of other things going around. I mean, this time of year, that entire area is so alive. There's largemouth bass. I've just seen people catch really nice smallmouth bass on shad gear. There's obviously the cafe.
In that area there?
All that whole area right there, yes.
You know, that would be funny, Mark. Out of all the times we've been trying to catch a bass, that'll be the time we're actually going to catch a large.
That'll be our weekend.
Like just this past week, I know some buddies of mine. I'm not going to tell locations, but it's very close to that whole area. And I mean, they've caught 4-pound smallies right there on shad gear.
Which really, I heard someone caught a 19.5-inch one the other day.
I'll tell on myself, man, because I got so excited the first time I went. This was my first trip. I had never went shad fishing, and I was using conventional gear, and I don't know, some kind of shad dart. My first or second cast, my rod bends. I'm like, yay, Corey's like, oh, you got one already. I'm all excited, you know, I'm fighting, pulling up. I got a catfish on a little shad dart. I was like, are you serious? I tried all I did to catch a shad, and I'm catching. And then, I caught a catfish.
Catfish are aggressive, man. Yeah, catfish are aggressive. I've seen people catch really good-sized carp down there. White perch might start moving up probably mid-April, so you want to see some decent-sized white perch as well.
Gizzard shad in there?
Yeah, there's gizzard shad in there. It's highly unlikely that you'll catch gizzard shad on line on rod and reel.
Okay, I'm just making sure that everybody knows the difference. You'll smell those when you bring them to the boat if you catch.
You smell them. They have a very blunt nose. They're usually wider body, or taller body. I don't know if that's the right term, but they're tall. Like they're deeper. Their bodies are deeper than normal, than the anadromous shad.
All right. Well, it's 9:00, and I know you guys got stuff going on. So, Rob, we'll go to you, since you're still talking. Tell everybody where they can find you Friday night, what time, and what's going on. Not this Friday, but next Friday.
Yeah, April 12th, Appomattox Service Company in Midlothian. It's 6:00. I'll be there. I'll have a little slideshow. I'll show off some of my spots. I'll have pictures of the difference between American and hickory, and answer any questions you want to have.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Well, thank you, Rob, for calling in and giving us some time on Tuesday. We appreciate it, as always.
Yep.
All right, Tom. Where can everybody go to get more details about next weekend's event?
They can go to www.msshadshootout.org, and I'll put it in the chat room again. Oh, not that one.
How many chat rooms you got?
No, I was about to post up the USGS water thing again.
I got you. But that's a good one for everybody to keep on there. So for everybody who's listening on podcast or on their, what do you call it? Phones or apps, the msshadshootout.org, and you can get all your information on there for the upcoming event. Tom, you're going to call in next Tuesday and follow up with us and let us know if anything's changed or what you got going on just one last time, okay?
I certainly will.
Very good. And next Tuesday, we're going to have Spencer Cook on. Spencer is a rep and director with Astro Buoyancy, who makes some of the lightest, best PFDs, in my personal opinion, on the market. So he's going to be calling in. Also, anybody looking for some awesome new water shoes, they just came out with the new Brewers and all kind of, like I said, PFDs from whitewater to good, comfortable fishing jackets. So if you're not familiar, listen in next Tuesday night. Spencer's going to be on, and Tom's going to call us back again. So we are at the top of the hour. Chris, we got anything? Everybody still behaving? I see you and Joe making nices. That's nice. All right, everybody. Thank you very much. We appreciate it, as always. I don't know if everybody's been following on Kayak Fishing Radios. The numbers for all 4 nights have been incredible, and we can only do it because of you guys. So we thank you for tuning in. If there's anything ever you want to share or like to hear us try to do on a topic, don't hesitate to get in touch with us. We'd like to share whatever we can. If you got any events coming up, Joe, let me know in advance so we can share it on the show. And that's about all I got. Hopefully this weather will straighten out. We can all go fishing more than sit around talking about it. Good night, everybody. Chris, get us out of here.
Good night. cut lines, everybody. No matter where you're fishing, remember, take your children fishing. They are our next generation anglers.